gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the, oh no, you should know better than to put a dog story in front of me before the show. Oh,
oh.
No, it's a dog with a human face. Look at that,
it's kind of creepy looking. Kind of creepy looking.
Oh no. He looks a little like Ben Stein, I have to say, without the glasses. He does. I've seen that puzzled expression when I debated him on Larry King.
And without Ben Stein's money.
Right,
well,
right.
There's that scene in the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers where the human head is accidentally
right.
on the dog.
Right.
That kind of looks
weird.
Like that.
Yeah. By the way, Ben Stein was on my flight to D.C. for the inauguration. In first class, of course.
Of course.
And we were joking about it back in coach. We were like, if we had won Ben Stein's money, we'd be up there with him.
Indeed.
Hey. His lovely wife were up there.
Oh, boy.
Tonic. That's his name. Tonic the Eerily Humanoid Poodle Shih Tzu Mix. He ended up in a kill shelter in Kentucky.
Oh.
The good news is he's no longer there.
Good.
He's been the two-year-old person-faced pup. Has been vetted, groomed, and ready for immediate adoption in Mishawaka, Indiana. So go get him. Look.
That's creepy.
You just really stop looking at me like that. Okay. I can't take any more after the Budweiser pony. The Budweiser.
He looks like the grumpy cat.
He kind of looks like grumpy cat, yes.
Exactly. All right. So lots to get to today. Kids, Chicago continues to sell like crazy. I would hurry this week and get your tickets for Sexy Liberal April 13th at the Chicago Theater. It is. We just went on sale Friday, and it's gone, you know, cuckoo bananas. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, Sexy Liberal Hal Sparks will be in here with us in Hour 3 today.
Mm-hmm.
In Hour 2, Tina Dupuy and also Representative...
Luis Gutierrez.
Right. I could pronounce it. I was just getting to it.
You haven't been able to pronounce it before.
Luis Gutierrez.
And so I was just trying
talk
to
about immigration
head you off
reform.
At the pass.
Lou Guitars.
Like, that was like a pronunciation intervention. You were just like, hit me before I hit the carpet.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we hadn't discussed it beforehand.
Right. Okay.
And so I was...
All right, just because you didn't hold up the phonetic sign, I understand. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Mr. Guitars.
He treats me like a toddler on roller skates with pronunciation. He's just like,
oh,
let me do it. I'll do it. I'll hold you up. Hang on. All right.
So, Lou.
All right.
How long have you played guitar, Lou?
All right, let's get to Right Wing World, shall we?
What? It's early.
I know it, right? We have lots of guests. We're all guested up after this.
We are.
Oh, dear. Really? She's still around, the old gal.
Yeah.
Ann Coulter on
the old Fox. War horse. The old battle axe.
On Fox News, on guns?
Yes.
Okay.
Background check means universal registration. Universal registration means universal confiscation, universal extermination.
Sure.
That's how it goes
right.
in history. Do not fall for
Hitler
universal Schindler. Background checks.
Mm-hmm.
She got to Hitler before you did.
Universal Studios.
It leads to universal extermination?
Yeah.
Really?
Background checks lead to extermination.
Really? Really? Okay.
Right. Just like driver's licenses lead to universal walking.
So that was a way of not saying Obama Hitler in the first sentence.
Right,
but
right.
The implication. You can draw your own conclusion.
She's a genocide. Skosh too clever to you know, make the direct comparison.
Remember how I said that everybody should have a seat at the table?
Yeah.
In the gun debate? I was wrong. Completely wrong about that. Some people, there's no... Really? Is there anyone, even the biggest Obama hater, that really thinks that? Oh, well, that's something we all ought to think about. Chin stroke, uh-huh. That the president's thinking of exterminating everybody.
Registering guns.
Right. Okay.
You take them all away and then kill everybody.
Let's write that down in that column. No, I know.
It's only logical.
Thoughtful chin stroke. No, in other... Yes. You know, on second thought, you're a lunatic. All right.
You know, just like happened in Australia, the gun buyback. Everyone was killed.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone was exterminated.
No. Right, as everyone knows, no one...
There's no one left in Australia now.
No one exists in Australia.
Right.
Just the koalas.
That's kangaroos.
Right. Okay. Bill O'Reilly.
And crocs.
Liberals want to make the debate about limiting firearms, even though they know With 300 million guns already in circulation, those limits will do absolutely nothing to prevent violent crime. Absolutely nothing.
Lie.
Again, the Democrats and the president know that.
Okay, moron. Look, you had an assault weapons ban.
Right.
And
now
by banning
expired.
Them, gun deaths went down dramatically.
Right.
Now that it's expired, they've gone up dramatically.
We have a number, actually.
Coincidence?
Tripled since the assault weapons ban.
Everybody knows that.
What?
Oh,
No, not really.
Oh, you know what? Here's how we can inject some reason into the debate. Let's invite Ted Nugent.
Oh.
I'm Piers Morgan.
We're not talking about guns. We're talking about the act of murder. Do you care about murders, or do you only care about murders with guns?
I care about all deaths.
I don't think you do. I think you care about guns. I think you're obsessed with guns.
No, I'm obsessed.
99.99% of the gun owners of America are wonderful people that you are hanging around with here today.
Yeah.
Perfectly safe, perfectly harmless, wonderful, loving, giving, generous, caring people. Would you leave us the hell alone? Go after
people?
The nut jobs. Go after the murderers, because I don't know any.
You don't know anybody slightly unbalanced?
Hmm.
Maybe even a little more than slightly unbalanced?
Now, if you come to see me playing state fairs or casinos, I'll go on where we went. And I didn't.
Mike!
Harmonized guitars.
We just happen to have a tribute to Ted Nugent all ready to go right in the middle of Right Wing World.
What?
That is magic. Thank you, Rocky Mountain Mike. How did you know that was going to happen? Okay, Stuart Varney on the Fox and Friends.
Gas is spiking. Fresh numbers in this morning.
Oh,
the average price for regular across the country is now $3.53. You're up close to 20 cents. Since Monday of last
Why
week.
Is that?
That is a spike. Well, look, you can trot out the usual suspects, all the refiners, the oil companies, the conspiracy theorists, or supply and demand.
Right.
I think it's because Ben Bernanke is printing dollars like a up a storm, and that is lowering the value of the U.S. dollar, and that means that oil goes up.
No. Idiot! It's...
Then everything would be affected by
exactly.
This. Not just
the Feds. Once again.
The Fed's making gas prices go. I've never heard that.
No,
I must say, I have never heard that.
As an American, I'm appalled.
I don't think
Ben Bernanke is doing.
Stuart Barney has no idea how the American economic system works. Yet he's an economic reporter on Fox Business Channel. No wonder Fox Business
is tanking.
Just saying.
Okay.
Wow. I think you should invest in trillion-dollar platinum coins. Bury them about the backyard.
All right. Wow. It's like they're going to try that again. Remember Newt Gingrich ran with the little gas pump thing?
Yeah.
That was his prop for his campaign. I should have asked him if he had one of those left over when I ran into him at the Charlotte airport.
You should have.
I should say, can I have one of those things? Isn't there? Don't you have one of those tchotchkes?
In his carry-on?
As a kind of nostalgia piece, a little knick-knack, something for your disastrously failed campaign?
And he's acting as if gas prices go up simultaneously everywhere in the country. They don't.
Right.
They've been consistently higher out here for various reasons.
All right.
Well, also, we're switching over to the summer blend pretty soon.
Right.
So,
That. Mmm, it's like Starbucks Christmas blend. Okay. Mark Levin, just because he's so pleasant to listen to.
Our biggest problem is Barack Obama, and we're being stabbed in the back.
Oh, come on.
The group, the Conservative Victory Project, is intended to counter other organizations that have helped defeat establishment Republican candidates over the last two election cycles. It's the most robust attempt yet by Republicans to impose a new sense of discipline on the party, particularly in primary races. And let me remind you, folks, there would be no Ted Cruz today. There would be no Deb Fischer today.
Right.
There would be no Mike Lee today. No Ron Johnson today. No Pat Toomey today. There would be no Marco Rubio today.
Right.
No Rand Paul today.
Ooh.
The heart and soul
like
of the conservative movement in the Senate.
Ugh.
but for conservatives and the Tea Party.
How can
Yay,
people listen
fight,
to that?
Fight, 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 fight. There's a fight broken out between the GOP establishment and the Tea Party. Go, fight, fight.
I thought I had a headache before. But
yeah, how can people listen to that for three solid hours?
And by the way, the stab in the back, that's the Nazi term, Dolchstoßlegende.
Oh,
the idea that they'd been stabbed in the back in World War One, which led ultimately to the
World War II.
Right.
Yeah.
And see, we've gotten circularly to Hitler again already in Right Wing.
But he did. He was
yes,
the one
I got it. I got it.
And he should know that.
That is spectacular. He is kind of like a dental drill, isn't he? Can you imagine
yeah.
if they had him on in your dentist's office? What if he was, seriously, if your doctor, your dentist was right wing, and that was happening while you were getting your teeth drilled? Like, do you have to have that? What? Why don't you have easy listening? Really?
Mark Stephanie Levin Miller. She's sarcastic.
Mark Levin and a root canal? Really?
Oh. And okay. You know how I hate sarcastic people.
Rush Limbaugh on the very same subject.
Karl Rove and his pack. What is it, American Crossroads? Is that the name of his pack? A New York Times story a couple days ago that basically said they are going to end up choosing Republican primary candidates so that they're not going to be Tea Partied. This announcement, this newspaper article about Karl Rove's intentions is only serving to unite the Tea Party in ways even now it hasn't been.
As Mark Levin just demonstrated.
What? Yes, you really got it together over there on the right. Yes, sirree. Only unity.
God. I have never seen such a party in disarray. The Democrats have never been in this kind of disarray.
There's a great story on Bloomberg. We're going to talk about that after we get back.
You went to tea school.
It's fisticuffs over there. Yay. The equally soothing Laura Ingraham. You're not the boss of who you can choose in primaries. Oh, kids, don't fight. You're all wrong. 17 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Taking back God. Taking back the flag. Taking back America. And all before breakfast. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. We've gone down the Weird Al manhole.
Oh, boy.
1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Let's go to Mason in Ohio. Hi, Mason. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sunshine?
I'm good, moonshine. Go ahead.
I thought I'd add a little bit of insanity to your right-wing world nonsense that you've been talking about this morning.
Yes.
I was watching C-SPAN, and they had on Representative Burgess in Texas.
Right.
And he gets up and says, sequester is going to happen. It's an absolute. When they move the deadline to March, then that guaranteed that it's going into effect and that there's nothing the president can do about it because it was his idea and he must stick to his promises.
Mm.
And there's no use in arguing it anymore because it's been argued. So he's like, okay, take a machete. Go ahead. Chop up everything. It doesn't matter what it is. One huge swing. And he's good with it.
Wow.
He's absolutely good with it. And I don't understand after all the rhetoric that GOP's been talking about changing their point of view and turning around the party. This isn't it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I mean,
they're in historic disarray, which is just could not make me. Yeah, this Karl Rove thing. It's just hilarious. Oh, first of all, we have very sad news. Karl Rove got it wrong and wrong again.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new Fox News contract. Dick Morris didn't. That's very, very sad.
Aww.
The headline is Fox dropped Dick Morris. And the only question is, how far did he bounce?
He bounced a long ways because Bumbles bounced.
Right, and he hit a sack of hammers on the way down.
Didn't I ever tell you about Bumbles?
All right.
Bumbles bounced!
Ow! Ow!
We shall hear him no more in his The Man Winded by Run-On Sentences.
Although Piers Morgan is having him on very soon.
Oh, good.
Yeah, on CNN.
Good.
Thank God. He had a very melodramatic speech at the after the
titanic loss. This is not the end. This can't be the end. This is not how our country ends. This is not the end of the narrative that started with the revolution, continued through a civil war, and made us by far the greatest country on earth. This is not the end. We cannot let this guy end it for us.
This guy being the president.
How? Why are there hammers on the floor?
All right. We shall continue to exist here. Our Jim Morris impression via Jim Warren. All right, yeah, I don't know what the deal is, because Karl Rove got it. Karl Rove was just as wrong. Mm-hmm. Although I have to say, at least he was exposed for the, you know. Remember, he's like, oh, he's so all-powerful, Karl Rove. Ooh, he's scary. He was just a sad, pathetic little wrong man on election night, sputtering. But anyway, this is what caused all the trouble. Rove's move into the Republican primary and Reid's Tea Party. Fight, fight, fight.
Love this.
Shoving each other into the lockers. Leaders of the Tea Party fuming about plans by some Republican strategists, including Karl Rove, to tap the party's wealthy donors and raise money to help quote-unquote electable candidates win primary races. Leaders of the Tea Party and other Republican groups that oppose abortion and gay rights responded by calling Rove, founder of the Victory Project, a fake conservative who had declared war on the Tea Party. Fight, 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 fight. No, seriously, here's the thing. Kids, don't fight. You're both equally wrong about everything.
Ever.
So it doesn't really even matter how this comes out. It's the first public glimpse inside a power struggle inside the Republican Party, Bloomberg writes, in the wake of the epic November losses. If neither side backs down, the rift could lead to more costly Republican primary fights. Yes! Fight! 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 More weakened candidates to face Democrats in the general. Yes! Brent Bozell, our good friend, says their idea of the most electable presidential candidate was Mitt Romney, and before him, John McCain, and before him, Bob Dole. He has a good point. Don't fight. You're all losers. Seriously, you Tea Party crazies and you Republican establishment people, you're all wrong. Losers. These fake conservatives need to go away before they do more damage, he said. Yes. Right. Just
get rid of them.
Lurching back and forth between the Tea Party crazies and the GOP establishment losers.
Please. Any kind of moderation of any kind.
Let's review the fun facts of Karl Rove's group. They spent more than $127 million on 82,000 television spots to help Romney.
Yeah.
And he got... In Senate races, 10 of the 12 candidates they supported lost.
Wee.
And 4 of the 9 House candidates they backed.
Wow.
And then a lot of the disastrous Tea Party candidates lost, too. So please, give them some props for their loserdom. Look at Julie in Seattle delved into right-wing world on the interwebs for us.
Oh, dear.
I've seen some of these things. Stop the Islamist witch hunt against Representative Bachmann. Sign the petition.
Islamist witch hunt?
Yeah, witch hunt against Michelle Bachmann.
Since when do Muslims believe in witches?
Look at that. FEMA coffins headed to Chicago.
What?
They banned this video. It's a guy apparently in the FEMA coffin.
Mm.
Tea Party 2.0, rebrand, retool, recruit, re-engage.
Okay, go for it. See how well it went last time.
Regurgitate.
Go.
Oy vey. Wow. Seriously? I think the Tea Party's steeped a little too long.
Yeah.
It's time to toss that pot out.
It's begun to turn.
Keith in Texas, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Keith.
Hey, how you doing, Stephanie?
Good, go ahead.
I don't know if Chris remembers, but back in, I think it was about the middle of Bush's first administration, there was a gentleman that listed the characteristics and traits of Adolf Hitler and the characteristics and traits of W.
Uh-huh.
The right wing went absolutely ballistic. They wanted to put this man in prison. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just terrible. The idea that anyone would
and pretty much every day someone compares Obama to Hitler based on nothing.
Nothing. Bush was a bit more like Rudolf Hess. He's a fairly decent athlete, but could fly a plane just well enough to crash it into Scotland.
Right. Just saying Hitler said Poland had weapons of mass destruction. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Preliminary reports indicated
Stephanie Miller
was drunk at the helm. Those reports were later confirmed.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. I'm sorry, Jim, what's that? Is there an Obama skeet shooting action figure already? Why, yes, there is. Yes,
cool.
There is.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky Mountain Mike says racist hillbilly conspiracy theory sold separately. Okay. All right. So that's a thing. Huh, actually. Right. Okay. Oh, hey, speaking of racist hillbillies. Now, Chris, I'm not saying every Republican is racist, but whenever there's a story about so-and-so says fill-in racist homophobic thing here.
Right.
Do you think there's many people in the country, whether you're Republican or Democrat, that go, huh, wonder if that was a Republican or a... Oh, it's a Republican.
It's a Republican.
Uh-huh. Oh, from the South? Oh, really? You don't say.
Huh. What did they do now?
This guy that we talked about yesterday, the guy that sent the really racist homophobic tweets during the Super Bowl, the South Carolina...
Kim Cannon was his name?
Republican.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
He defends mocking Trayvon Martin's death.
How?
Apparently the rest of it is missing the humor in that.
He
said
a kid
one
died.
Of the tweets was the this Super Bowl sucks more than Trayvon Martin for drug money if he'd been alive.
But he wasn't
whatever
buying drugs. He was buying Skittles and iced tea.
Yeah,
right. And then when the blackout, he said it's darker in here than when the what do you call them
the pores
during Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
That you know
whatever
once again. Okay, so do you think he maybe found some sort of soul something?
One would hope.
Thought of Trayvon's parents?
No.
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 Former South Carolina Republican Executive Director Todd Kincannon defended a series of provocative racially charged tweets he sent out during the Super Bowl. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
We read all of them yesterday. It wasn't like a one-time drunk tweet. No, it was a series. He told HuffPost Live that mocking the death of Trayvon Martin and the pores during Hurricane Katrina was just high-profile trolling.
Huh?
So I guess that makes it okay. He said he didn't understand why the killing of Trayvon was political and insisted joking about the Florida teen's demise was fair because of all the people who said insensitive things about the killer, George Zimmerman.
Oh, George Zimmerman is alive. Trayvon Martin is dead. Trayvon Martin was unarmed. George Zimmerman was armed.
Right. So see, it's insensitive things like that that you point out the facts of the case. He said, I think it's funny... to make jokes that enlighten people on political problems.
Problems meaning black people.
Yeah, this isn't
alive.
Political.
Yeah. He added the purpose of satire sometimes is to offend people to teach a lesson. Oh, well, consider us schooled. I think it's time for a conversation in this country about why a conservative isn't allowed to state an opinion that other people happen to disagree with without having death threats and being threatened with all kinds of various ridiculous things.
So all conservatives are racist is what he's implying.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, really?
So.
Conservatives.
See, this is what this is what they try to do in right wing world. Every time they go, oh well, this so and so liberal said something.
So Michael Steele is a racist because he clearly because he's conservative and therefore according to this guy's quote logic unquote.
Right. Okie dokie.
Huh.
In a totally unrelated story, how do you think this is going to end? And Alabama high school football coach. Suspended following rant about, just take a guess, fill in what it's about. Anything racist, anything?
I don't know.
Yes, it is. Racist about,
okay.
Yes. And homophobic. Just mean. Bob Grisham, please and thank you. Mediaite brings us the story. Head football coach and psychology teacher. There's the rub.
Ugh.
At Lauderdale County High School in Alabama, has been suspended for 10 days after comments he made about First Lady Michelle Obama and not liking queers. Audio of the teacher... audio of the teacher's remarks were taped by a student. Oops. Speaking about 600-calorie lunches, Grisham is heard ranting about fat butt Michelle Obama. Look at her. She looks like she weighs 185 or 190. She's overweight. While another voice chimed in, big fat gorilla.
Wow.
In what world is Michelle Obama overweight?
Right. After lamenting the country is going in the wrong direction, Grisham went on to talk about gays. I don't believe in queers. We don't need you to believe in us, but thanks.
They don't believe in him either.
I don't believe in you either, so there. I don't like queers. I don't hate them as a person, but what they do is wrong. It's an abomination against God. I don't like being around queers.
And I don't hate redneck hillbilly morons.
But right.
I just don't like being around them.
Right.
Later, Grisham said he misspoke.
Yeah.
How?
Not sure which part of that. What he meant to say. Wow. Wow. Okay. Rick in Tennessee, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Rick.
Hi, I had a question. I know you guys hadn't really touched base on this yet on the drones.
Yeah.
And how that they're going to go about deciding this and things of that nature. But let's just say that you and your crew, or you change jobs, and let's just say you're overselling cellular equipment or radio equipment over there, and you just happen to be selling to a guy that is Taliban-related or whatever. And are you exposable now just because, you know, this is, I don't know if you're familiar
with... Wait a minute, you're losing me. If you're, say this again, if you're an American in Afghanistan?
Correct. Say you've got business over there. You're over there selling oil rigs. I don't know, but you've got some contact with a known terrorist. I mean, how are they... I know that they've come out and said, the press secretary said that, you know, we'll limit casualties, you know, we'll try to cut down on casualties. But let's take it that it's one of you or me, and we're over there doing business. I mean, we're innocent enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it just seems fuzzy for me.
Yeah, I'm a little bit troubled by the Justice Department's ruling on this. Troubled,
here's
actually.
Here's Eric Holder yesterday on this.
We only take these kinds of actions when there's an imminent threat, when capture is not feasible, and when we are confident that we're doing so in a way that's consistent with federal and international law.
Right. You can say that the administration can do that. However, what's to say the next administration isn't going to take this and run with it even further?
We've already killed a lot of innocent civilians in Pakistan.
You know, I think what happens is this is
war with them.
Right, but this is right after George W. Bush, who started a completely unnecessary illegal war. I mean, a ground war.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so I think in the wake of, remember when the president was running, he said, I'm going to run a smarter, a tougher but smarter. But
still.
And I think that he has. But what my point is, it's obviously in getting us out of these two wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, it seems like this is part of. And I agree with you that it's somewhat troubling, but it sure as hell is better than being in two ground wars at the same time, in my opinion. But Jay Carney yesterday.
These strikes are legal, they are ethical, and they are wise.
Jill in Ithaca wants to talk about this.
Boy.
Hi, Jill.
Yeah. Hi there.
Hey.
Yes, it is very troubling because there, you know, we call it collateral damage. There are so many, there's like 4,000 innocent people, including many children, dead. More than our unfortunate people here that died in the Trade Center. And who is to determine? These people should be tried in absentia.
Yeah.
Tried in absentia, I mean.
Right, meaning they're not there. Alaki, I might not be pronouncing his name correctly, Alaki, the one they killed with a drone. Why is his 16-year-old son dead by a drone? What did that, you know, I'm sure the kid, you know, maybe was trying to follow in his father's footsteps, but those people should be tried and then determined by the American people.
Yeah.
I don't like the power that's going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a happy clappy.
You know, I mean, you know, I got it. You know, Jill, I guess my point is that look at this entire Afghanistan war and how many people have died. And then, you know, the president came in and took out bin Laden. And you think, well, you know what I mean? You can't help but think, what if? What if Obama had been in instead of Bush? What if Al Gore had been in instead of Bush? Would we ever have gone into Iraq? Would we have, you know, been in Afghanistan this long and fought, you know, and again, took our eye off the ball there and gone into Iraq? And, you know, this has gone on and on and on. So, you know, even in getting bin Laden, you go, he is fighting a tougher, smarter war on terror than George Bush fought by a ton, don't you think?
Yes, and I agree. We would probably not have gone into those wars, at least definitely not Iraq. But I think the American people have to pay attention. I'm afraid this is a slippery slope.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Yeah, thank you, Stephanie. I'm glad you guys are paying attention, too, to this.
All right.
And also, just to let you know how very strange some of our fellow Americans are, I went to, it's not my usual character, but I went to a NASCAR event here in Watkins Glen this summer.
Uh-huh.
There's mothers, they have drones there. The military was there with drones. They have their children posing with those death machines. I mean, people, please.
They have drones
up.
At a NASCAR event?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, they were military presence. They're trying to recruit. You know, it's part of that whole mentality.
They're not flying over the NASCAR event. They're just sitting, as a recruiting tool.
Wow,
gotcha.
Ken in the Adirondacks, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Steph, Mooks.
I'm ex-mil Vietnam, and I would have loved to have seen some more drones there and a lot less boots on the ground, because I was in a helicopter carrier offshore being shot at. A, B, if the last caller, next to last caller is selling cellular equipment to a known terrorist, he isn't innocent enough, he's guilty enough to be in the blast zone.
Ooh. Well, you know, Ken, it's interesting. I was just, you know, in this whole gun debate that's going on, what do they call them, straw sellers, you know, that's the other, I mean, even in that debate, they're looking at, there's one particular murder that took place where the guy got the guns, he couldn't pass a background check, and a woman knowingly sold them to him. She bought them from a gun dealer knowing that she wasn't going to, you know, use them herself, and you know, and that's I think you lie on the background check that you say they're for you, and he, you know, anyway, but I'm just saying there's an analogy there about, so who's liable for what if you know. So I don't know. Like you say, that's an interesting question. If you're selling to known terrorists and you know they're a terrorist, I don't know the legality. But is that your point?
Exactly.
I don't think it's a reason for them to be killed by a drone strike, though. I think that's what you're getting at.
Well, it's not going after the cellular salesman selling to a guy.
Right, but he's the collateral damage.
Exactly. Yeah. He just happens to be there at the wrong time. Well, then too bad, because you're not supposed to be
because
selling
America says it's
war
legal.
Material. Yeah. You shouldn't be selling and giving.
You know, Ken, I understand both sides of this. Like, I understand people being troubled, but I understand a Vietnam vet like you going, boy, I wish, you know, look at all the good boys that died and that will never, you know, that we lost in Vietnam. I mean, it's really, it's, you know, so I can see he has a different take on it. 46 minutes after the hour, I'm guessing some more people might have some more things to say about
the
this.
The phones have lighted up, lurted up, I don't know.
Right, right. Yeah. Herp, derp. As we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
If your radio sounds funny, don't touch that dial. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 51 minutes after the hour. Oh, look, it's a hate letter all in caps.
Oh, boy.
So you know they mean it.
Oh, boy.
Somebody, R.A. somebody. The only unbalanced people I know is you and your staff and guests. Just because someone owns a weapon doesn't mean they are criminal or mentally retarded as you and your juvenile staff giggle at every day.
Don't. Never said that. Never. All right. Produce the tape. I dare you.
Okay.
No, people who write letters all in caps are probably you should.
Oh, see.
See what you did there. Okay.
And exclamation points.
Judy.
Where they don't belong.
Judy in New York. Hello, Judy.
Good morning.
They put the emphasis on every syllable, which is incorrect. Hello, Judy.
Hi, sweetie. How are you?
Hi. Go ahead.
Hey, look, you know, I've been listening to all these things about the drone strikes and all that. You know, I've never been a hawk. Used to write Nixon dirty letters during Vietnam, the whole nine yards. But every time somebody says that the drone strike about the cleric there,
yes,
Alawi or whatever the heck his name was, look it, when that silly SOB pledged his allegiance, his fidelity to the likes of Al-Qaeda, he ceased to be an American citizen.
Not legally,
though. He forego all his rights, all his privileges to due process.
Well, Judy, I thought our last caller was an interesting take as a Vietnam vet, you know, just saying.
Sweetie.
No, but right, because you mentioned Vietnam, but saying, boy, I wish we had some drones then, as opposed to that many boots on the ground.
Oh, you got that right.
Yep.
I had enough problems keeping track of F-4s, let alone drones, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to thank you for your service. I'm going to give you a $50 Sherry's Berries gift certificate card. What do you think about that?
Oh, sweetie, thank you.
That makes it all better now, doesn't it? All right, hang on, Judy. All right, $50. We're giving them away all week. All you do is you go to berries.com, click on the mic, type in the code word Stephanie, and you get these giant, freshly dipped strawberries. Someone sent me a graphic of a strawberry the size of a baby's fist.
Did they?
That's a Sherry's Berry.
Mm. I don't know what made me think about baby's fist as a size comparison.
And swizzles and fo shizzle. They're dipped in chocolate.
Chocolatey goodness.
Right?
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Dan in Virginia. Hi, Dan. Dan, hello, Dan.
Hey, guys.
There.
The thing about the drone strikes, you know, the thing is, you keep mixing apples and oranges. When you're in a time of war and you declare yourself as a participant in that war on the other side, you're an enemy combatant, not a American citizen. We're in a time of war. The Congress of the United States that can conduct or declare war gave that authority to George W. Bush and the parameters, the war on terror, and we were in Pakistani airspace, and a lot of those drone strikes we're doing at the behest of the Pakistani government. That's why you don't hear all the international outrage.
You know, Dan, and I'm saying, it's not that I don't appreciate people's concerns. I guess it's just when you put it in the scope, as you just did, of George W. Bush, who, you know, got us into these two wars. The Afghanistan war dragged on and on because we took our eye off the ball, let bin Laden get away, went into Iraq. So, you know, when you look at how he conducted foreign policy between Iraq and Afghanistan and how this president has got us out of Iraq and Afghanistan, got bin Laden, you know, and like you say, it's certainly a lot less casualties than, you know, we've been having. But that being said, I you know, Chris, we should have a legal expert on what makes you an American citizen or not, or whether that makes you an enemy combatant. I don't know.
All right.
You know?
Well, you know, also we created Al-Qaeda when we sent Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen to go after the Soviets in Afghanistan. So we really have nothing to complain about. We put that all in motion.
Richard in Chicago. Hi, Richard.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I just think, look, I'm a big Obama supporter, but this is just wrong. I do feel like, and I'm not going to blame this on, this policy is an Obama policy, the escalation of drones that's been happening. And, you know, I just think it's a slippery slope where it turns into a convenient way to intervene. You know, I mean, you can withdraw from Afghanistan and Iraq without using drones. This is just an escalation of his policy. And, you know, I just feel like it's going to make it easier to intervene. I mean, you talk about the behest of other governments. Who's to say some junta that we're cozying up with down the road? You know, we set precedents. That's our whole legal basis in this country's precedents. Mm-hmm. And who's to say a future president cozies up with a junta and they, at their behest, they want us to wipe out some camp that's opposed to their government. Mm-hmm. So it's a bad policy. I think it makes warfare easier.
It's
I don't like it.
It's interesting. You know, it kind of plays into this whole, like, Zero Dark 30 debate, right, about, you know, because a lot of people think, you know, the message is by any means necessary.
Right.
I think you can trust, you know, President Obama, the Obama administration, to do the right thing with this policy, but you can't trust subsequent administrations. I mean, what if a neocon administration comes in after this?
Right.
You can't trust them to use this policy in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And my friend sent me this. She said this is a review from her friend who's a Vietnam vet. He said, just saw Zero Dark 30, was utterly dismayed and disgusted by the politics of the film. It goes like this. One, torture a guy and obtain a lead to find bin Laden. Two, find bin Laden. Three, kill bin Laden. There's no way you can view this film and not see torture as a crucial element in finding bin Laden. The film's narrative says to the viewer, if you were happy we got bin Laden, credit the torturers as heroes. The ends justifies the means. The big problem, of course, is it isn't true. It's a total fabrication. No credible evidence that led to bin Laden's capture was obtained by torture. In fact, it was the opposite. Torture and human rights abuses by Americans forced victims into giving up wrongful information that hurt our intelligence efforts. Zero Dark 30 blatantly rewrites history and justifies America's use of torture. Incredibly irresponsible, reprehensible. Zero Dark 30 is the Dirty Harry of our age. Dispense with due process, justify breaking the law and all moral codes, endorse human rights violations, essentially teach Americans that Abu Ghraib style torturing of detainees is all good.
This is why I won't see it.
Right, right, but I'm just saying, you know, it's funny, like Roland, sexy liberal tour director, had the complete opposite view of it. He saw, I fell asleep, so I can't judge, I have to go watch the screener again, I watched the first whatever,
right.
But, you know, he thinks that, you know, it does make the CIA, I mean, it's like, I was saying Catherine Bigelow wrote a thing in the LA Times, and she talks about that she doesn't personally believe torture led to bin Laden, but she said to portray that time without including it.
It wouldn't have been true to history.
Right, it would not have been historically accurate. Right. And I understand that you know, that too.
But it does make it look like torture led to
fighting. Right, a lot of people have that view that saw it. Anyway, but we'll talk a little bit about what she said, and then we'll continue. We have Tina Dupuy. We have Representative Louis Gutierrez.
I'm letting you do this by yourself because you yelled at me for helping you last time.
Gutierrez.
Luis Gutierrez.
I said it.
Gutierrez.
Right. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 minutes after the hour. Oh, you're having a little IM spat with my boy toy Jeff?
Yes. Jeff and I are disagreeing on this whole drone program.
He's pro-drone?
He's pro-drone. He says it's the Democrats have needed a way to look strong on defense for a long time, and this is a way to do it.
Well, as Jim said, civilian casualties, not strong.
No, yeah.
Not tough, but yeah.
You know who looked tough? The Nazis.
All right.
Come on, I had to do it.
Julie writes, as for the person from Tennessee who just called who wants to sell oil rigs or something to a quote-unquote known terrorist in Afghanistan, it's a war zone, you moron. If you want to do business there, odds are you're going to get killed, if not by a drone, by your customers. Okay, that's...
Well, it's not that much of a war zone anymore.
I would think of another line of work than selling anything to known terrorists in Afghanistan. Just saying. I'm just trying to help people, you know, figure out what color their parachute is. Okay.
Hmm?
It's an unsolicited testimonial from Judy. Staff, the Steph subscription, only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance.
That's right.
$7.95 a month if you have a fear of commitment.
And you can listen to it through the new Stephanie Miller app on your iPhone or iPad.
Right. The Stephcast subscription has changed my nightly routine. Thank you for apping yourself. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need some Steph swag now. Oh, be warned. It could be a gateway drug. Could be a gateway drug to Steph swag.
And you can get the Steph crap through the Steph app.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Okay. All right. And there's also sexy liberal stuff, which is fabulous. I have sported both the vintage tee and the ladies destroyed tee. Both are fabulous. And you can get tickets. We only 3 sexy liberal live shows this year. We already did East Coast and D.C. Chicago just announced on Friday, April 13th. Audrey and Kate in Minneapolis are coming. They're the singers on all the Rocky Mountain mic pieces. Steph, Kate bought our tickets as a surprise for me. We'll be driving to Chicago to see the big Midwest sexy liberal show. We are super excited. Thanks for asking. To spend a weekend in Chicago with so many fun and interesting people, Audrey and Kate in Minneapolis coming down for the big Midwest show.
Actually, they put together their own stuff. Independent of Rocky Mountain Mike.
I know it.
Okay.
Right?
You said that they were the singers on Rocky Mountain
Okay. Mike. Okay. And also, I did have some sexy liberal information. Where is that? Sexy liberal tour director Roland.
Uh-oh.
Oh, for God's sakes. Really? I think there's only 2 single VIP.
Right. They're not together.
I got it. Right now, there are 2 single, not together, VIP tickets. Those are all that remain for Chicago in terms of VIP. But if you're a single sexy liberal, get a meet and greet from the gang and maybe from someone in the audience. A lot of people getting sexy liberal strains. That's true. Also, we priced a bunch of tickets at $25.50. We are carrying sexy liberals after all. There are only about 100 of those tickets left, so if you want them, grab them now. Wow. Okay. Oh, my God. Roland had the funniest story yesterday, only could happen to him. He tore a neck muscle or something, so he was in the doctor's office. And guess who was in the waiting room with him? Harvey Fierstein and Nathan Lane having an incredibly loud gay argument.
Well, is there any other kind of conversation those
Not
two could
arguing,
have?
Conversation.
Is there any other kind of conversation those two could have?
Conversation. But it made Roland hate gays.
Oh, I hate you so much. You're just evil.
That happened to me once. I was on a flight that landed,
mm-hmm.
and the loudest, most flamboyantly gay guy started having the loudest conversation on his cell phone, like right the second we landed, and I, on behalf of the entire plane, that I hated gay people. I was like, oh, please, can you stop?
Oh,
you are so irritating. Literally, the minute the plane landed, that person got on the phone and went, Dorothy, I'm not in Kansas anymore. Come pick me up at the airport. I was like, oh, really?
Wow.
Oh, God.
Christopher Guest thought that was over the top.
Yeah.
It's like, can you tone that down? I mean, really. All right. By the by, we got into the whole drone debate and Zero Dark 30 torture, moral lines, yada, yada. So I was reading one Vietnam vet who had Jim's view. Jim hasn't seen it, but who thought that it endorsed torture and that it was detestable and yada, yada. So I was saying, Catherine Bigelow, I thought, made some good points. I've quoted some of this before, but she wrote finally in the LA Times about it. She said, I support every American's First Amendment right to create works of art and speak their conscience without government interference or harassment. As a lifelong pacifist, I support all protests against the use of torture and quite simply inhumane treatment of any kind. But I do wonder if some of the sentiments alternately expressed about the film might be more appropriately directed at those who instituted and ordered those U.S. policies as opposed to a motion picture that brings the story to the screen. And I agree.
All right. Yes.
Right. I blame the Bush administration more than I blame filmmakers. Anyway, those of us who work in the arts know that depiction is not endorsement. If it was, no artist would be able to paint inhumane practices. No author could write about them. No filmmaker could delve into the thorny subjects of our time. This is an important principle to stand up for, and it bears repeating. For confusing depiction with endorsement is the first step toward chilling any American artist's ability and right to shine a light on dark deeds, especially when those deeds are cloaked in layers of secrecy and government
obfuscation.
Indeed, I'm very proud to be part of a Hollywood community that's made searing war films part of its cinematic tradition. Mm-hmm. Clearly, none of those films would have been possible as directors from other eras had shied away from depicting the harsh realities of combat. On a practical and political level, it does seem illogical to me to make a case against torture by ignoring or denying the role it played in U.S. counterterrorism policy and practices. Experts disagree sharply on the facts and particulars of the intelligence hunt, and doubtlessly that debate will continue. As for what I personally believe, which has been the subject of inquiries, accusations, speculation, I think Osama bin Laden was found due to ingenious detective work. Torture was, however, as we all know, employed in the early years of the hunt. That doesn't mean it was the key to finding bin Laden. It means it is a part of the story we couldn't ignore. War obviously isn't pretty, and we were not interested in portraying this military action as free of moral consequence. Right. So anyway, interesting debate on that, and I need to finish watching it. And stop being a falling asleep loser. Okay.
Maybe it started in the afternoon, not in the evening.
Yeah, it started in the morning.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So, obviously, immigration, much in the news as also as we're debating it. Representative Luis Gutierrez joins us now. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for taking time for us.
It's wonderful to be with you this morning.
I saw some comments you made. Uh-oh. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm in Congress where bells go off and elevators.
Okay.
And I wanted to make sure that, and we have one meeting. You know, the good thing is, and these people know we actually work when we're here.
That's true. That is true.
That's good. Good.
Go ahead.
You know, I saw some comments you made. You said GOP tone is important in the first House Judiciary hearing. I like that John Conyers said yesterday. Can nobody please use the word illegal immigrant? You know, to refer to a human being, right?
Yes, yes, yes. I can't. I will have to say that yesterday's meeting, everyone tried as best they could to set a new tone. I know. I want to say present company included. What I tried to do yesterday was ignore anything that I thought was negative and bombastic and really sometimes just mean. And to accentuate the positive comments that my colleagues are on my side of the aisle.
Well,
my Republican colleagues.
Yeah, you said yes. You said many of the House Republicans I talked to understand they have mishandled the immigration issue and their approach has alienated voters. You say whatever the reason is, that brings Republicans back to the immigration negotiating table, I'm glad they're back and look forward to working with them to resolve this issue. So
there are some who understand. I have to tell you, I think John McCain was brutally honest when he used one word to describe why he's back, and he said politics, and he repeated what.
Yeah.
Politics. And, you know, it's refreshing a lot of times here when people just go straight to the grain, right? And they say it's about politics. And what he is saying is, look, people voted. I wanted them to vote for my party. I wanted them to vote for me. They said no. Guess what? John McCain is saying, I still want a chance in the next election cycle at their vote. So he hasn't given up on them, right? And he says, the only way I can have a chance at their vote.
Right, yeah, what he was saying, Congressman, is I should have stuck with the McCain-Kennedy-McCain. Because that's right.
Absolutely. And let me tell you something, but on a very serious, he is very knowledgeable about this issue. I spent 2 years with Jeff Flake, now Senator Flake.
Mm-hmm.
We introduced with Flake Gutierrez and then Gutierrez Flake in the House and Kennedy McCain, depending on who was in charge in the Senate. We spent 2 years drafting that legislation. John McCain is very knowledgeable about this issue. I was very surprised and taken aback when he said we have to secure the border, because it is such a contradiction between saying that and proposing comprehensive immigration reform. Comprehensive immigration reform parts from the understanding that border security is only achievable if you fix all of the other components
That's right. That's right.
Our broken immigration system, and John McCain knows that.
Right. So, it reminds me, Representative, the gun debate is there are a lot of elements to it, and you have to try to fix all of them, not just one. You're absolutely right. If you just focus on border security, and you know, and you said before the hearing, you said for years we've been talking about electrified fences, overblown stereotypes of criminals and gangbangers, mass deportation fantasies, and Republican-controlled immigration hearings. And so you, but you went on to say most Republicans I talked to understand 11 million people here illegally will not be leaving the country. And that holding out for self-deportation puts Republican lawmakers out of this, out of step with the country as a whole. I mean, watching that Republican primary, you know.
So let's put yesterday's first hearing. Number one, isn't it a grand thing that the first hearing of the Judiciary Committee is a full committee hearing talking about immigrants?
Yeah.
And at least they put immigrants from the high-tech industry and their needs to be reunited with their families. Those were their witnesses. We got one. We got the mayor of San Antonio, I think, did a wonderful job of
Julian Castro, representing. Right.
He did a wonderful job. But let's just put yesterday in context. Okay. So they went to their convention in Tampa, and here's what they put right in their program. This is in their program. SB 1070, the anti-immigrant law of Arizona, which two-thirds has already ruled unconstitutional. They said that should be implemented in 49 other states, number one. And number two, they said, 11 million undocumented workers, well, they should just self-deport, and then we eliminate ourselves of all illegal aliens from the United States of America. And moreover, Romney said, and it's in their platform, we will veto the DREAM Act. Now, yesterday, we've got Majority Leader Eric Cantor saying two things. He believes they should be legalized, and he believes they should have a pathway to citizenship.
Right.
That is a sea change in terms of where they were at. So we have to figure out now what is the point at which we can reach an agreement with the Republicans. Now, lots of this is going to be procedural.
And you said,
let us do it the way we did it on the this one. Let's say the fiscal cliff, right? So what did they do? They said, we're going to put 40 Republicans and 180 Democrats, right? We could do immigration reform like that tomorrow, right?
Right.
So it all depends on what their insistence is and how many of their members have to be part of this process.
And you know, you're right. Eric Cantor's comments, let's start with the kids. I mean, you said yesterday we're starting in a different place, much less grandstanding and fear-mongering among the anti-immigration wing of the Republican Party. But you also made an important point. You said we need legal immigration across skill and education level so we don't create an underground for workers after reform. I mean, it's a complex issue, and I'm glad that people like you and Mayor Castro are there talking about some of those important issues.
Well, you know what? Here's what I say. I'm happy. Let me share this with you, because I know I can. So I'm in the gym. You know, members go down to the gym just to shower up and shave and get ready for their day and do a little exercise. And I'm coming up, and I see Paul Ryan. And, you know, Paul Ryan knows I did everything I could to make sure he wasn't vice president of the United States. And he comes up and he says, hey, Luis, you and I worked together in 2005. He endorsed, you know, Kennedy McCain, Gutierrez Flake. He was part of our combo back then, right? He endorsed it. He was a sponsor of the bill. He said, you know, Luis, I want to do it because it's the right thing to do. I went back to his office. We talked. And he said, you know, Luis, you and I, fundamentally as Catholics, right, it is not in our value system to create a permanent underclass. And so he said he wants to fix it because it's the right thing to do.
Well,
so you know
good.
What? I have to tell you something. I think there are a lot of people who want to fix it because it's the right thing to do, but I'll take them, as McCain says, because it's politics.
That's right. That's right. Were you able to take him seriously? Did he have like that baseball cap turned around backwards while he was doing curls in the gym? Or was he, all right.
You know what? There is always the trick in bipartisanship, right? That I'm sure that he'll say something and somebody will say, well, what was Luis doing at that point
while
you were saying that? But I think that these are expressions of change.
Yep. No, it's all hopeful. It really is.
And it should bring us hope, because in the end, during the last few minutes, you and I have been talking, every minute a person's deported.
Yep.
We know that the majority of them never committed any crime. They're not drug dealers and, right, and gangbangers and rapists and murderers. They're people who are picked up at their job site. And this hour, a dozen American citizen children will be left without a mom or a dad. Some of them will be left orphaned. So look,
yep,
America, you know, this is an urgent issue. So we need to build. If Democrats had 218 votes, you know what? I'd still be saying, I don't know if I can rely on all 218 Democrats to get the bill passed.
Exactly.
So let's just say we are at 201. Here's what I believe. I believe that my Democratic caucus, I bet there's 180. If we work it really good, even more Democrats.
All right.
So we're not going to ask the Republicans to bring the majority. You know, it isn't like one of those issues, oh, you bring half and we bring half. This isn't that kind of an issue. This is the kind of issue where our caucus is clearly. So
right.
I would say this. The people spoke, and they said they want comprehensive immigration reform. Democrats, we want it very, very badly. And the Republicans really need comprehensive immigration reform. So I think that combination, that scenario can lead us to success.
Absolutely. Representative, we're out of time, but thank you so
much.
Always so great to talk to you on these and other important issues. Talk again soon.
Look forward to it.
Thanks so much. There he goes. Representative Luis Gutierrez of the great state of
Illinois.
Okay, 22 minutes.
Oh, my
22
God.
22 minutes after the hour. Really?
State of Nova Scotia. No, wait,
right,
that's wrong.
Back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's the life of the Democratic Party. Ignore the lampshade. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 27 minutes after the hour. Tina Dupuy coming up after the bottom of the hour. As wrote on our blog, Tina Dupuy makes my pants tight.
Yeah. Now, someone tweeted that.
Awesome.
Yes. And then after her, we have Ian Millhiser, who's a legal animus.
Right. On the whole drone thing. Kevin in Chicago writes, remember when we took out a few blocks in Baghdad with our first shock and awe bombing because Bush believed Saddam Hussein was in one of those buildings? How come no one complained about the no-doubt innocents that died with just that one strike? That was his point about drones. Let's go to Andrew in California. Hi, Andrew. Welcome.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Good. Go ahead.
Listen, before the top of the hour, Jim said something, and I had to object to it. He said that we created Al-Qaeda. We did not. We trained Osama bin Laden to fight against the Russians in Afghanistan. He created Al-Qaeda. That's like blaming us for the Russian bloody purges for the Lend-Lease program during World War II.
Okay.
Which was against the Nazis. But
Al-Qaeda just means the base in Arabic. It's just a database of the Mujahideen. That's where I heard that that's where it started.
By the way, Julie has another Hitler reference for you. If someone wanted to open a hot dog cart in Dresden in 1945, being an American citizen would not protect them from getting.
No.
Okay.
That's Kurt Vonnegut. He was there.
Phil in Florida. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Steph.
Hi.
Steph, I work with migrant farm workers. I have some concerns about the new immigration bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Number one, the process for someone who's undocumented to get lawful permanent residence, that's a green card, I think it's going to be very lengthy. It's going to be extremely expensive. And I don't think overall that poor immigrant workers, including agricultural workers, are going to be able to afford it. It's going to take 10 years. And then the question is, in the time that they get online to when they get a green card, they're still undocumented.
Well, that's the point with making it too tough. You're going to defeat the purpose. Yeah. People are going to stay in the shadows. 29 minutes after the hour, Tina Dupuy. I'll do it for you. Next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
She's like a human Macarena, something everyone did at parties in 1996.
It is the...
I never got invited to those parties.
Me neither. I don't remember them. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Oh, it's that time.
Speaking of funny and smart, yeah. I want to bring on Tina Dupuy. Tina Dupuy is brilliant. She's funny. She's a terrific writer.
Tina does everything, and I just love her always.
Good morning, Tina Dupuy.
Good morning, Stephanie Miller.
See, I have to be here to keep pointing out how smart and funny you are, just to counter the what did the guy say on our blog?
Well,
Tina makes his pants tight.
Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, we apologize for our listeners.
All right.
I'm like a cheeseburger.
Well, yes, sure.
On behalf of that guy, I apologize. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about the NRA's ominous new enemies list. Ooh, it's at the enemies list. They're back. It's kind of hilarious, right?
You won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore.
Yeah.
Right, so they compile this list, right, of people who are opposed to the NRA and people who are anti-gun and who want to destroy the Second Amendment, right? Because they're all the same basic thing, those three things. You basically, if you don't love guns, you hate Jesus and apple pie.
Right, and that would include the 92% of Americans who are for background checks, presumably. So it seems like they left some names out.
It seemed a little thin to us.
Yes.
It was only 506 names. It looked like a pretty daunting list. It looked like they were kind of feeling sorry for themselves when they compiled it. I say way too short.
Well, right.
I mean,
you said besides it being a sad attempt to intimidate those who've spoken out against guns or specifically the NRA, it wasn't a very good list. It wasn't comprehensive. A list of politicians, but not Mayor Michael Bloomberg. A list of journalists, but not Rachel Maddow. And I noticed that there's no
Stephanie Miller.
I mean, really?
Yeah, we're going to get on that right after I get off the phone. I didn't want to presume anything, but
right. Yes,
if you want to be on that list, you are on that list.
Oh, Tina, listen, hook me up.
You got it. That was the other thing. I was like, what am I not doing with my professional life that I am not on the NRA's list?
Where have I gone wrong?
Exactly. I'm clearly not doing
the right people. Don't hate me.
Well, it seems to me anyone who is against little kids getting shot in the face should be on that list, which is probably more than 500 people.
Yeah, 506 specifically.
Maybe 515.
Yeah.
The Mayors Against Illegal Guns has 100 mayors on it already. I mean, that just that, and very few of those mayors were on the NRA's list, and arguably they would be, against the Constitution, clearly. So we made a list of everyone in Congress and everyone in the Senate and all those mayors and celebrities who have spoken out, and, poor Bob Costas, who was going to be hung out to dry before, weeks before Newtown, he was, kind of in the crosshairs of the right wing, that he was the guy who was just so completely inappropriate to mention violence on Monday Night Football.
Yes, exactly. Well,
how dare.
Right.
And by the way, where are the courageous mayors for illegal guns? Where are those guys?
Right. That is a list I would like to see.
I mean, it really is incredible to say, like Gail Trotter. I mean, it just, what is her group? I mean, literally, it's a group that is against the Violence Against Women Act. So
right.
Women that are the actual victims of domestic violence, she does not support that. But she supports the woman's right to choose a whatever scary-looking gun she would like, right?
Right, and government just needs to get out of our lives and let us beat our wives and let us have all the guns we want. What's the big deal?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I loved, I don't know if you saw the Lawrence O'Donnell thing, but it was fairly hilarious. You don't go to the Senate to imagine things. You go to testify as to facts. But she literally went and talked about some hypothetical situation where there's 5 armed intruders and babies screaming in the background, right?
But you have to have an SKS assault weapon at that moment.
Right. And I think the one congressman pointed out, yes, the actual story you did tell, that gun's not banned. That's a shotgun. I mean.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Well, I mean, there is a bit of like a Bruce Willis fantasy with all this stuff. I mean, every single time we have one of these horrible incidents, which, are you know, like Newtown, you had a bunch of people seconds after this tragedy saying, you know, if I were there, I would have done this. And the fact of the matter, I've talked to people who were in the theater at Aurora and in Aurora, and what happens is you don't know who's shooting. They're just it's so loud.
Yeah.
It's so unexpected. It's not like the movies where you kind of like you can see the bad guy entering the theater and then you hear him, you know, cock his gun. This is like it's complete and utter chaos, and that's why in Midtown there are a bunch of people suing the New York Police Department for shooting them because they were trying to shoot the bad guy and they ended up just shooting a bunch of people because it was Midtown.
Right.
You know, so it's this kind of fantasy that we're in the movies and we're, you know, since we're good guys and Wayne LaPierre loves to talk about good guys and bad guys, we identify ourselves with having the proverbial white hats and we think that we're going to be able to, you know, we're going to win after 2 hours. At the end of the film, and well, that's just not how it works.
You know, Tina, interesting, speaking of that whole the good guys with guns thing, I mean, we've been talking about this tragedy. Chris Kyle, you know, reportedly, you know, supposed to be the deadliest sniper in American military history.
Mm.
I mean,
right.
You know, reportedly a good guy with a gun was trying to help other veterans, and, you know, but again, just another example of how, you know, a good guy with a gun doesn't solve every problem. In this case, it ended in tragedy.
Right, and he was at a shooting range.
Right.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, and I've said this on your show, and I say this, and I'll say it until my face turns blue. If you look at other countries who have fewer guns than we do, we have the highest amount of civilian gun ownership in the world. And if the NRA and LaPierre were right and more guns make us safer, we would have the fewest amount of gun deaths per capita.
Right.
And the opposite is true. We are 14th in the world. Out of 200 countries, we are 14th in gun deaths and even higher in gun injuries.
Right.
So it's just not true what they're saying. We're supposed to be, you know, we're an industrialized nation. We're still the richest country on the planet. And yet, you know, if you go outside in some neighborhoods in America, it's, you know, pollution.
Yep. Tina, one of my other hot, smart girl writer friends, Joan Walsh of Salon, she wrote a piece, you know, entitled Obama's Gutsy Gun Control Push. And it is interesting. She quotes in here like Senator Chris Murphy, who said too many people in Washington want to eulogize specific pieces of gun reform legislation before the debate has even started. And, you know, again, not to get over optimistic, but I do think this time really is different. And the NRA really is so out of step with the American mainstream. I still remain somewhat hopeful. Do you, about what can get done on this?
I remain really hopeful, and I like that. And I wrote about this weeks ago. I think that the assault weapons ban kind of sends us down this weird path where people who don't like guns or just don't like being shot are forced. You know, I mean, there is a distinction there. are forced to talk about different kinds of guns and ammunition and magazine capacity and things that they clearly don't know anything about. And so they get, it's a booby trap set by gun enthusiasts where you basically.
Oh, we had a guy yesterday. We had a guy yesterday, Tina. That wasn't your stupid. It wasn't an assault weapon in the Newtown. Yes, it was. Like,
okay. Yeah, he just shot himself with a shotgun. That's
right.
That was where the shotgun was used.
Right. Yeah. So the assault weapons ban basically causes people who just don't want to get shot to have to talk about guns intelligently, which is not their, obviously, their best foot forward. But when we talk about, you know, giving the ATF teeth to actually enforce these said gun laws that we supposedly have, that, you know, if we, and there's been studies like in Chicago that the main saturation of guns on the street and used in illegal in crimes are done through straw purchases. And straw purchases are how guns are getting onto our streets. That, you know, the secondary market are how 18-year-olds, Stephanie, are able to buy guns.
Yep.
Usually you're supposed to be 21, but 18-year-olds in the secondary market at these gun shows are able to purchase weapons. And there's no background checks, and nobody's checking, and they're not registered. We don't know who has all these things, and it makes law enforcement very tricky. So if we are talking about, you know, for the greater good, And well, as far as gun safety, the assault weapons ban will stop a few deaths, as but having the ATF have teeth and enforcing these laws,
right. Well,
right. Much better.
Tina, I saw, I think, that same piece where they were talking about some gun dealers just turn a blind eye when people are buying, like, say, multiple mm-hmm. of the same gun. They know they're not buying them for themselves. They're buying them to resell them to people without background checks, right?
Right, because they've been able to do it with impunity. There's nobody to enforce these laws. They're not going to lose their license. There's nobody checking up on that. Like, and there's a financial motive. I mean, let's be honest. They are in a business, and the gun lobby, they're not lobbying for, you know, for you and me to have our constitutional rights and our freedoms. They're lobbying for gun manufacturers to not be able to get sued. And that was a thing that we did in the, you know, I mean, the Winchester Mansion is a fantastic example of this kind of idea. I mean, they used to sue gun manufacturers, and now we don't, because we don't have that ability.
Absolutely. That I think that's a huge piece of it. Tina, the fabulous Tina Dupuis, speaking on behalf of the large constituency of people that do not like being shot.
That's right.
Giving us voice.
It's a niche.
It's a niche, yes.
TheContributor.com. Tina, always great to talk to you, honey. Talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right, there she
Yay.
Goes. I don't like being shot.
I don't like being shot.
Okay.
Tina speaks for me.
I'm Spartacus.
45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Get it. 15 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Wow, all sorts of moral debates we're getting into this morning. Tully writes, Steph, regarding the email I wrote, the guy that the Vietnam vet that did not like Zero Dark Thirty. Steph, it's evident from the descriptions of Zero Dark Thirty, the reader had not seen the movie and has criticized it from the corners of his own skewed beliefs. One needs only to read Michael Moore's defense of the movie to know that the Dirty Harry 24-esque torture porn he describes is a complete fantasy. The film actually stands as an example of why torture, like almost any form of violence, is an extremely inefficient process. I have no qualms about anyone who chooses to avoid seeing the film, as it's no easier of an experience than United 93, but it's far from the immoral celebration of violence that the other email described. Tully. So, everyone has an opinion this morning about everything.
I don't. See what I did there?
All right. Ian Millhiser is a legal animus for the
analyst.
Right, for the Center for American Progress, because we've gotten into the drone debate moral debates this morning. Hey, Ian, welcome.
It's good to be back. Sorry it's about this really awful topic.
Yeah,
I know. Well, you know, and again, it's interesting. People all over the place on this. We had a Vietnam vet call this morning to say, boy, I wish we had drones in Vietnam and less boots on the ground. I mean, and obviously a lot of liberals are on the other side of it, are very upset about it. I think one of the things we were talking about, Chris, is what, you know, if you are, at what point do you become an enemy combatant and not an American citizen legally?
Right. So what the memo says, and, you know, I guess I should preface this by saying that I actually think that this memo is right about what the law says. What the administration did here is legal. Mm-hmm. I also think that that's a really serious problem, and, it should not be legal. Right. So what the memo says is that when you have an individual who is a senior member of Al-Qaeda or another enemy terrorist organization, we are allowed to target that individual if they are actively engaged in planning operations against the United States, even if, like, one of those operations isn't about to happen. So if we aren't about to be attacked, if they're actively engaged in planning, they can be targeted. I think that that part is right. I think that, you know, we don't want people planning military operations or terrorist operations against the United States. The problem is that there's no way of reviewing that decision. So the president or someone in the Pentagon makes a call, and there's no oversight to make sure that the person they've targeted actually should have been targeted. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and I guess, again, you know, it becomes this, you know, moral equivalence, I suppose, of, I was saying that here we are coming out of the Bush years where we had this completely unnecessary illegal war, in my opinion, in Iraq. You know, took our eye off the ball in Afghanistan, so that war dragged on and on. So I think, you know, Ian, there's that argument people are making that a lot less people are dying, that it's, you know, it, when the president talked about having a smarter, tough but smarter foreign policy, you know, in some ways you go, boy, I wish we could have gotten bin Laden the way Obama got him before we lost all of these people on both sides in Afghanistan, right?
Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that generally Obama's foreign policy has been smart. I think that the attack on bin Laden was an example of a targeted killing that was justified.
Right.
And, you know, targeted killings aren't new. I mean, Admiral Yamamoto was the senior most commander of Japanese naval forces in World War II. We got intelligence that he was going to be flying on a plane, and we targeted that plane and shot it down because we wanted to kill Yamamoto.
Right.
Right.
So this isn't something new. What's new here, or I think, is two things. One is that we have the technology now to target people with a minimal cost to the United States, whether through drones or through other means.
Through American soldiers.
Right. Right. You know, relatively little cost to United States forces. And then the other thing that's new is that in this case, it involved a U.S. citizen. And so the question becomes, how do we make sure that if someone is a legitimate threat to the United States, as bin Laden was, as Yamamoto was, we can still take appropriate action while at the same time making sure that there's some checks on
right.
On,
and, but legally, yeah. Ian, I guess, you know, and again, because I'm just trying to understand it legally, at what point is there a point legally where you cease being an American citizen and become an enemy combatant if you are actively aiding terrorists?
I think that the U.S. citizen point here matters less than the need for oversight generally.
Right.
If someone is actively engaged in war against the United States, I think if they were born in Louisiana, that shouldn't save them. There were Nazi soldiers in World War II who were Americans, and they agreed with the Nazis, and they left the United States to fight on the side of Germany. And, you know, that shouldn't give them any protection when they're actively engaged in war against the United States. What can be done, though, and I actually have a piece that just went up on Think Progress with my colleague Zach that lays out some suggestions. You know, you can have more oversight through a board that the president has to consult with. You could conceivably create a special court where you have judges who are expert in these matters and can decide very quickly when a kill order comes, whether it's justified or not. You can allow lawsuits after the fact, which are very difficult to do right now, so that if it turns out the killing was not justified, at the very least, someone bears a consequence for it.
Right.
You know, these are things that are not really permissible now. And if Congress were capable of acting, Congress does have the power to put these checks on the president.
And I think that would, you know, maybe go a long way to assuage a lot of liberals that are saying, what about when there's another president? You know, because a lot of people say, well, I reflexively trust Obama. But you're right. It's a sort of a larger principle, no matter who's president, right?
Right. And that's exactly what the big fear here. I mean, I think that President Obama is a good guy. And while there are individual examples where I think, like, there have been strikes that have had pretty horrific collateral damages, I think that, you know, for the most part, this president has tried to act responsibly. We don't have that guarantee for every president. And so we need a rule that protects us from the good and the bad.
Well, somebody made the comparison to, you know, George Bush, the first shock and awe, you know, bomb took out several blocks of Baghdad because he thought Saddam Hussein might be in one of those buildings. I mean, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, as you say, it's there's that it's relative. But then, you know, I guess the thing you're talking about is precedent, which a lot of our listeners have pointed out as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, like, the part of the federal government that needs to act here is Congress. And I mean, one thing that I think that this reveals, you know, you hear a lot from conservatives that it's great that it's so hard for Congress to pass laws, that you've got all these, you know, veto points, you've got these committees, you've got these filibusters, you've got two houses of Congress, and somehow this makes us more free and we have more liberty because Congress can't do anything. well, right now we really need Congress to do something, and we need Congress to do something to protect our liberty. You know, we need to make sure that there isn't one person who has a unilateral authority to authorize targeted military strikes against U.S. citizens. And the way you do, you make sure that doesn't happen is that Congress needs to pass a law that places limits on that power.
Yep, absolutely. Ian, thanks so much for joining us on short notice. Appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Sure thing.
All right, there he goes. Ian Noheiser, legal animus.
Analyst.
Right, right.
House for the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
There you go.
Yep.
Hal Sparks, sexy liberal. Hump Days with Hal next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Makes people crazy. Joanne just sent me a picture of a dog furiously humping a Pink Panther thing. Hey, Pink Panther, it's hump day. Furiously humping a little Pink Panther stuffed animal. That's disturbing. Okay.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing? I hear why. Could it be? Well, hump days with Hal Sparks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Take it, Pink Panther. Ah.
Doo-doo-doo.
Hi, Hal.
I could have gone my entire life without hearing you say that.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Which I think is the last in the Pink Panther series. It wasn't actually
right.
Ever made.
Take it, Pink Panther.
That was the one with Steve Martin.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
You know you want it, Pink Panther.
Right.
All right. Kids, look who's here at Sexy Liberal House. Woo-hoo!
Hiya.
We just priced a bunch of tickets at only $25.50 for the Chicago show, April 13th. The box office exploded. We broke every record in the history of the history.
Yeah.
At the Chicago
Theater. Not
surprising.
Theater. Yeah.
Friday. That's right.
Hey, Chicago. You say twice is not enough.
15 is my limit.
Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is making a return visit to the Chicago Theater on April 13th.
With filthy mouths and bad attitudes.
Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com. Come see the tour that sparked the number one comedy album and its own TV documentary.
Who can argue with that?
The Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour at the Chicago Theater on April 13th. Sweet Home Chicago is about to get more sugar from Mama.
Do it.
Don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Sure.
Hi, how far?
Hi. So, yeah.
So, chime in on this, the drone debate, obviously. Tony writes, Steph, it's terrific we ask ourselves questions about the morality of drone deaths, but let's have some perspective, too. We aren't seeing downed American pilots getting dragged through the streets or held hostage. We haven't killed tens of thousands of innocent men, women, and children like we did in Iraq.
Right.
If there's a better way to battle evildoers and avoid all collateral damage, let's hear it. It's not like Obama is targeting Clark Griswold on a European vacation.
Right. Well, that's obviously the two big fears are the slippery slope fear, which is where... Honestly, liberals and everybody seems to go down the Alex Jones hole if they can do this, then that gives them total legal openness to shoot anybody who's against the state in any kind of vague way. Clearly, that's not the case in the tribunals that oversee this. And the, you know, it's not that it's funny that we're that much more concerned about a drone strike in another country that we're currently at war with or that we know that there are Al-Qaeda in, and we've been at, our forces have been fighting their forces for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And we give more attention and fear about that than, let's say, a cop who shoots an unarmed guy in New York City, drops the gun and walks away. You know, it says, I saw something shiny, and we have a little bit of a hearing, and then that's that.
Right.
The truth is, nobody has a funeral for a downed drone, and that's what this is all about. And the minute they have a drone that has arms that can snatch somebody out of their car, and bring those people to an actual courtroom, that I think technologically speaking, they would do it in some cases.
Right.
But in this case,
the legal stuff with Ian at the Center for American Progress. Ray writes, Steph, here's another perspective regarding the U.S. drone strike policy. Doesn't get much discussion. It's precedent we're establishing. Let's say Mexico decides our drone strikes in Pakistan have been so successful, such a tactic might help them in their anti-drug war, and so they start flying drones over Arizona and New Mexico and target bands of alleged Mexican drugs arms smugglers. Would we congratulate them on their initiative or take it as a declaration of war on the U.S.?
Well, we would take it as a declaration of war on the U.S. and Mexico would actually never do it. And the analogy to Pakistan is really watery, and that's been the problem with Pakistan is because they've given us all this tacit support, including allowing us to do supply lines through their country, arguably saying, for war, you can use our land. Right. And then not liking it when those guys went into Tora Bora, ran over the border and hid in Pakistan. In an area, by the way, where the Pakistani military does nothing about it.
Right.
So, and again, borders created largely by, you know, European and British influence over, you know,
post-World War I.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, over decades. So not really based on the reality on the ground of where the land lies. I mean, most people can't tell you where the Arizona-Mexico border occurs by looking at it. You know what I mean?
When you see the big fence, that's when you know.
The dang fence.
Yeah. I will say this, too, that there's not a single general out there who, if they go, okay, we can send in 9 soldiers to get this guy, or we can send in a drone, who will send the 9 soldiers, if they can really do it. I mean,
all right. So let's... I saved a happy, clappy story for you.
Uh-huh.
Let's turn to happy, clappy news. Well, because of the gun debate, you know, like I keep Joan Walsh, our friend who did Sexy Liberal with us in San Francisco, who we love. She wrote a piece called Obama's Gutsy Gun Control Push. He's asking for what he wants, not just what he thinks is possible. Hope that's a template for his second term. But this is the thing I keep saying. It's let's stop going with the political wisdom. Like, oh, you can't get that done. It's never going to happen. Her point is that the president is really leading on this issue, among others. Yep. And I agree with her.
Well, I think the vast majority of what he's actually asking for isn't that outside the mainstream by any stretch. I mean, that's the thing.
That's the point he keeps making.
The ironic part about it is that he'll get a lot of credit for leadership in this particular area, but it's an area where the public is already there. If you're punching a hole into a new territory as to what would be available, then you'd get more pushback, too. I think politics is the art of what's possible, you know, and I think he's mastering that in his second term.
This is what Joan says. Second term Barack Obama continues to show us he's wiser and tougher than the guy who took office 4 years ago, the latest on his stance on gun control in Minneapolis on Monday. He laid out everything he intends to push for, not merely pushing criminal background checks and tougher penalties for gun trafficking, but also the part of his plan that'll be the heaviest lifting the assault weapons ban.
Right.
She does, when you talk about whether the debate's different or not this time, I didn't see this, but she talks about that Chris Wallace on Fox News disemboweled Wayne
LaPierre. Yeah.
She calls it unpantsed him, but I mean, that's where you go, something's changed in this debate.
Part of it is because Wayne LaPierre is an embarrassment to anybody who actually is a logical, smart gun owner. They represent, the NRA is to gun rights and gun ownership what the Tea Party is to the Republican Party right now. They are just the far
right
extremist
version
of them. And they're embarrassing to that level. They're a losing organization.
But I mean, she called this, but the fact that happened on Fox News, and granted, not on, but I mean, on one of their primetime shows, but, you know.
It's also Chris Wallace, so there's a little bit of,
it's their Sunday morning show, which is still influential.
But she said it's one of the most astonishing political confrontations in memory. He called LaPierre ridiculous for suggesting the president's daughters don't deserve more protection than other children. He derided him for alleging with no evidence the background checks are first step to a national registry that will allow the president to take away everybody's guns. He called the NRA's claim that Obama's daughter's schools has armed guards nonsense, since his children also go there, and he said, I happen to know they don't arm their security.
Right.
And again, if he's talking about Secret Service, give me a break.
Yeah.
Every president's child.
Right. They're not allowed to not have it.
Finally, he mocks LaPierre for suggesting the only elite have protection, pointing out he traveled there to the Fox interview with his own
bodyguards. He had bodyguards there.
He said he reduced him to a sputtering wreck.
Yeah. Well, which is, by the way, not hard to do. The problem is, again, LaPierre is, you know, in the same way that, like, Bush gets a lot of credit for being charming when you meet people. Like, LaPierre they get a lot of news for being powerful as an organization. But the truth is, it's not about the power of the organization. It's about the fact that nobody confronts them. Nobody goes to the second question.
And Joan also points out about how politically it was brilliant that he framed it, you know, politically with all the police organizations, because that, you know, necessity means that these are the enemies of the NRA, apparently, all these police organizations. And he said our law enforcement officers should never be outgunned on the streets. So,
well, LaPierre and those guys are always talking about the tyranny of the government, and the Second Amendment was there to fight tyranny. That means shoot cops. That means shoot National Guard. That means shoot Army soldiers who are coming to your house because you are cooking and selling meth to supply your guns for your militia overtaking of downtown town Detroit.
Right. Right.
That's the reality of it. Anybody who has the fantasy that you're going to go up against the U.S. military at some point and says that outwardly means eventually they think they're going to kill a cop.
Yeah.
And I would say to them, which one? The dad of the kid that goes to your kid's school?
Right, right.
If you're not homeschooled, you know, Ted Nugent, buffalo meat style, I suppose. But but in reality, these guys have to start admitting that I don't mind if you have the Wolverines fantasy. I really don't.
Yeah.
If you're a nutcase and
yeah.
you live in the woods and you're like, you know, what if the Chinese and the Russians join up and decide they are going to enforce communism in their own gangster way and
right.
and we can't fight back and I'm going to have to fight them.
Let me ask you
Fine.
Whether, because she brings up a really good point too, though, whether it's on health care and all these debates we've had, what do we do about these conservadems? She said, I'm tired of red and purple state Democrats getting a pass on gun issues because hunting, say, is popular in their states.
Right.
Who could be more valuable than a red state Democrat in telling hunters Obama's agenda won't take away their hunting rifles? And she talks about Harry Reid, which did take me off on Meet the Press, saying, oh, I don't know if I'll vote for the assault weapons. I did last time because it didn't make sense. What?
Right.
So like, I mean, that
it made sense enough to work.
Right.
Maybe
right.
didn't make political sense for
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But what do we do about those Democrats?
Well, I mean, essentially they have to be continually called out. But the reality is that if you look at the numbers, if you look at the NRA gives you an A rating, how well do you fare? It is almost meaningless
right.
to the election of people, if not detrimental.
Somebody made that point that half the people, I mean, however high percentage of people, they supported loss. So stop
right.
being scared of them.
Exactly.
Oh,
you don't
gonna,
need
you
their,
know.
And most smart gun owners, you know, like I said, my dad has a lot of guns. And is technically a member of the NRA, but doesn't have any interest in having, you know, an anti-tank weapon.
Right.
And so they don't really send him the literature all the time.
Right. Let me finish what Joan says, because you know what? It is the art of the possible now in second term. And
mm-hmm.
happy, clappy liberals like Hal Sparks have been saying that all along.
Yeah.
She says, the point of leadership is to lead. And as we saw with gay marriage, when the president stakes out a forward-looking stance on a divisive issue, he can help bring people along with him. I'm glad he's continuing to push for the assault weapon and large magazine ban, even as the serious, sensible people of the Beltway insist it'll never pass. Maybe he'll surprise them. Because of Newtown, we're in a new era for gun control legislation, which doesn't mean we'll get everything we want, but it requires a new approach to political leadership and negotiation, and the president is providing it.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about making his stand in Minneapolis, where they've cut youth gun violence by 40%. And a lot of it, it's just there's a lot of parts of it. It's not just guns. They've focused on time-tested, softer approaches to youth violence, including connecting isolated young people with adult mentors, treating violence as a public health problem, like we did with smoking and drunk driving, new jobs programs for unemployed teens, coordinating resources for at-risk kids in schools. Obama's handling Minneapolis is another sign he's looking to deal with gun violence in poor urban neighborhoods, not just focus on affluent suburban tragedies. So, again, call your senator, congressman,
right.
whatever, say, you know, I am for the assault weapons ban. I am for this reasonable gun legislation.
It worked before.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the problem, and that's what they fear, ultimately, is that it will
right.
work. It's the same problem with gay marriage. You know, there's a big section of the anti-gay marriage crowd that is afraid that gay marriages will start lasting longer than straight marriages, and they will have a real problem on their hands of explaining.
We'll screw it up just as badly as straight people. That's where there'll be equality. So. All right, 18 minutes after the hour, we continue more Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
On the Stephanie Miller Show.
The mere fact that I'm a breathy voice, full sensual lips, and a steaming hot body doesn't make me a bimbo.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show Hump Days with sexy liberal Hal Sparks.
Uh-huh.
24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Let's go to Lana.
Lana, hello.
Idaho. Hi, Lana.
Oh, excuse me.
Pardon you. Go ahead.
That's right.
I'm so sorry. Wow, you caught me totally off guard there. Anyway, I wanted to say I was very, very grateful for the person who released the document, the white paper, I guess they call it, because this is a conversation that we've been needing to have for a very long time about these drones.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone has been addressing that. And I would like to call for the full release of the document that, you know, the legal memo that goes to it, not just this tiny little piece of paper.
Right. Well, the essence is that is it. Unfortunately, it's the precedent that's been kind of built over time that allows for it. That's why it is legal. And part of it was the boiling water killing the frog that was the Patriot Act in the Iraq War.
No, but there's a full memo out there that
sure.
we haven't had, 50 pages or more that is actual legal.
Sure. But again, all you're seeing ultimately is the refining of warfare. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, we are moving from World War I, World War II, massive casualties, massive bombing, entire cities destroyed, but hands off the leadership.
Yeah. Karen in Pasadena
agrees.
Yeah. Hey, Karen, welcome.
Hey, I am so grateful to be on your show. Thank you.
And
thank you for you.
Oh, well, thank
But
you.
It's so nice to have a brilliant president once, somebody who's smart, who what I'd like to address is something no one's I haven't heard yet. And this is big business. So this is more cost efficient. So the people who are going to push back on this are the ones that have been probably the same oil tycoon Republicans that have had long pockets. When there's war, you've got the tanks. You've got all of the things
right.
that make
yeah.
money.
Military-industrial complex, yeah.
Absolutely. So these drones are far more cost efficient. Lives aren't lost. They can concentrate on building America. This is what this president has done, has put in place. And they're going to push back just like they're pushing everything else back. They don't want them to succeed. And because
right,
he's
but
so
Karen,
smart,
I think
how dare him be so smart.
Right, but I think the fact that we have some moral concerns is what makes us uniquely American too. I think that's okay.
That's him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's him. That's who raised. He was raised by morally concerned. He was never a silver spoon person, nor was his wife or any family members. So that is a new and improved thought. Mm-hmm. And
I think she makes a good point. Yeah, I think she makes a good point that that ultimately you have, definitely these are moral choices made on who's
mm-hmm.
getting killed and when. But and they're no different than any other president during wartime making a who gets killed and when decision. But it is more
that's
refined
right.
and more specific than it has ever been in our history. And that's where it gets personal and scary. And it's worth the conversation and the awareness. But the idea that we were okay with shock and awe.
Well,
and that
I
got
said.
So much
out,
of a pass.
Right.
Yeah.
Dropped a bomb
right.
that took out blocks and blocks to try to get one guy.
A drone,
Karen, I love you guys.
I love you, too.
In 2014, it's imperative that, and I love that you're the voice that I listen to every morning. I go to bed early to listen to you.
You know what you
that
get?
Never happened before.
You know what
but
you get for your
2014.
You know what you get for your sucking up? You get a $50 Pro Flowers gift card. How about that?
Look at that.
Oh, Lordy. Now I got to find some more.
Lordy. Hang on. Travis is going to get your info. If you're looking for flowers this Valentine's Day, go to Pro Flowers. Click on the microphone and type
it.
In the code word Stephanie.
I do.
Thank you.
I use it too.
Why, thank
service.
You. Why, thank you. I certainly hope you type Stephanie in the box.
No, I type Flervin.
How do you spell it, though?
Bastard person, you really are. All right. Hey, guess what? The economy's getting better. The president's talking about
Dagnabbit.
That. Dagnabbit.
Our economy right now is headed in the right direction. And it will stay that way as long as there aren't any more self-inflicted wounds coming out of Washington.
Ooh. Yeah.
Wow.
No. And then we have some Eric
barbecue.
Right, and we have Eric Cantor talking about how he's going to just shoot himself economically.
Inflict some
right.
yes.
wounds on
yes.
his own self.
I just freaking shot myself.
Well, the interesting thing is that trying to make him a one-term president, that goal of lowering the economy, of depressing the economy, actually had some value. It was tactically it could be smart. This time around, it does not. Because it sets up poorly who they might want to try to run next time.
Yes.
And it certainly doesn't hurt doesn't help in 2014.
Yeah, they're in a bit of disarray. We'll have some of that audio next.
Say the least.
On the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Hey, hey! Are you ready to get rowdy?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12 Hump Days with sexy liberal Hal Sparks. Get it, go. April 13th, Chicago Theater. Selling out very, very quickly this time. All right. By the way, we've been talking about drones and killing Bin Laden and yada yada. This is just fun news. Pakistan plans an amusement park.
where Osama bin Laden was killed in Abbottabad.
Abbottabad. Abbottabad.
Not fun about that. It's a water slide.
Abbottabad.
Bumper cars.
Right, maybe. They're planning an amusement park and recreation complex in Abbottabad. Mm.
Would there be a monorail?
It'll include a zoo, water sports, a mini golf course, rock climbing, and paragliding.
Wow.
Huh. All stuff you can do when you have nothing but sand and hills.
Right. Nothing but sand.
Yeah.
Sand.
Right.
All right. The president talking about the economy again.
We've also seen the effects that political dysfunction can have on our economic progress. The drawn-out process for resolving the fiscal cliff hurt consumer confidence. The threat of massive automatic cuts have already started to affect business decisions. So we've been reminded that while it's critical for us to cut wasteful spending, we can't just cut our way to prosperity. Deep, indiscriminate cuts to things like education and training, energy and national security will cost us jobs, and it will slow down our recovery. It's not the right thing to do for the economy.
You were talking about the IMF.
Yeah, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, who was in charge of you know, the Greek bailout and all that, and kind of managing all that stuff, came out with an amazing mea culpa like 3 weeks ago.
I was going to say, how'd that go for them?
Yeah, horribly. It's right actually on the same level of Alan Greenspan coming out and saying he was wrong from 1981 to 1999. But they basically said that austerity at that time was the actual worst thing you could do.
Right.
Right.
And they admitted that the money, the Greek economy, to bail it out, they got $800 billion from Europe. That money was supposed to go to them on the condition that they would cut their social safety nets, you know, their equivalent of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and that they would cut back on infrastructure spending and governmental stuff. They would tie all that back, and they would get this money. They did all that. They cut their social safety net. They cut unemployment insurance, all these kind of things. The money came into an account, in an escrow account, sat there for 3 days, and went right back to the European banks that had loaned it.
Yep. And regarding Alan Greenspan, I've always thought a man should not spend that much time in the bathtub.
Well,
I don't mean
you get pruny fingers.
I just picture, you know, Andrea Mitchell. Wrinkly. Just can I get in there, honey? Yeah. Can I get in there anytime today?
Can we have some sort of law where
his
Andrea
thinking
Mitchell
might have gotten a little soggy?
Has to have a tattoo on her forehead that says Alan Greenspan's wife, please.
All right.
Just like Mitch McConnell's wife, who was on CNN last week.
Yeah. Elaine Chao. Yeah.
Elaine Chao was on, and because she doesn't have the same last name, everybody immediately assumes she's some sort of independent thinker on this business. And like they should go, no, that's Mitch McConnell's wife.
Yeah, but just an arrow. And she, Mitch McConnell's wife.
Yeah, the Senate Minority Leader's wife.
Yeah, and she was accusing President Obama of being far left.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Really?
If she's random nutcase, that's fine, which is true. But she's the Senate Minority Leader's wife.
Right.
And here
she has an axe to grind.
Yes.
Here is Eric Cantor talking about the aforementioned austerity.
I think if you take the sort of suggestion that somehow you just keep spending money at the federal level and that's going to make life better for people, my goodness, we should have it pretty good right now, given that we're spending $1 trillion a year more than we have. I don't think that's the answer.
He is the exact parody that we do of him.
I know, that's the main. We're not
my
far
goodness,
off at
that
all.
Is
my
the
goodness.
The tackiest outfit in Montauk.
Okay, first of all.
This is the best, I must say.
A big portion of that is interest on the debt created by the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. So you should have done that thinking a decade ago.
Yeah.
Secondly, that's exactly what you do in these situations. Paul Krugman has been right the entire time.
Yep. Yeah, and I love, we were talking about with Charlie Pierce about Meet the Press, like he's debating Carly Fiorino.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, you need like big blinking, he's always been right, she's always been
always
wrong.
Been wrong.
About everything, right? Wrong, right, wrong.
She's one of the people who got a golden parachute after she basically ruined a company.
Right. Yep. Eric Cantor again.
There's a lot of lessons to be learned from the last election. Frankly, there are a lot of moms and dads out there that are hurting right now. A lot of working people that are having a real struggle trying to get through the month. And too many millions of Americans out of work. And I think what we all need to do is to focus on how we're going to make life work for those people again.
For the working man.
There are too many people out there who can't afford daily mani-pedis. But I'm going to fix that.
Why warm men moisturize, for instance?
Is it just me, or did he just basically make the point that the federal government can't do anything and must do something?
That's right.
Exactly.
Here
he is again.
We do intend to follow up with some policy proposals and legislation, working with our committees to move forward on many, many of these issues.
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. Same policy stuff that you had last time.
Yeah.
American people
said work
no.
So well.
Computer says no.
No. All right. One more time.
Our solutions will be based on the conservative principles of self-reliance, faith in the individual, trust in family, and accountability in government.
By the way, three out of four of which you cannot enforce, manage, or push from a governmental seat.
Yeah.
You cannot.
Right.
You can do nothing about the faith of the family.
We're gonna
you can
force
do nothing
you to lock your family.
About personal motivation. Unless you are going to hand out copies of Anthony Robbins' Get the Edge to everybody in the country, you cannot do anything. It's like when they talk about education funding. Like, look, we can't solve everything by throwing money at it, and it's all about families and parents. Well, I can't legislate what parents do.
Right.
I can't force them to do stuff. I can't make a kid magically have good parents.
Right.
You can't do it.
And
but what you can do is make sure they have enough books.
Yep.
Right. One more. Eric Cantor speaking as always for the average American.
The average American is not thinking about and trying to wonder about where the Republican Party is. They're thinking about how to make their life work, which is exactly what we're talking about here today.
The average American, he is correct, does not care about the Republican Party.
No, because they know the Republican Party does not care about them.
No, a failed exercise in self-involved corporate leadership doesn't actually have any impact on their lives other than in a negative sense.
One of the big stories happening today with the Boy Scouts are going to allow the homo gays.
No, they pushed it off.
Oh, they're delayed, yes, right.
Yeah, they delayed it till the sequester. Apparently it's tied to the sequester, just like Senate pay.
Well, it's another one of these headlines. Christian Post blogger who wrote about leaving homosexuality found cruising for dudes on Grindr.
Yep.
Wow.
A self-proclaimed ex-gay blogger who wrote extensively for the Christian Post about coming out of the homosexual lifestyle was recently discovered... just dipping a toe back into it.
Hey, well, let's be honest. Who hasn't gone back to their ex a couple of times? You know what I mean?
Not me.
Right. You know, in a moment of weakness.
Okay. Yeah, he said, I can say in truth firmly that the longer I keep turning away from my homosexual desires, the less in strength they become.
The more,
Until you open a Grindr account.
Right. Yeah.
And the more I check everything except for just friends.
I've turned my back on the gay lifestyle and dropped my pants.
He wrote, recently, although I have same-sex thoughts on a daily basis, I do not in any way feel compelled to ever return to a lifestyle.
Why were you trolling for dudes on
Grindr? I'll tell you why.
Testing his will to see if he could avoid the temptation.
I'll tell you why. Because it's not a lifestyle. Lifestyle is, I like hiking. You know, and if you want to go sexual, lifestyle has to do with the fetishes you're involved in. Because how you have sex is a choice. Who you have sex with is not.
Right.
That's your natural inclination. And if these guys want to fight their natural inclination, then they have something against God, clearly.
Mother, why did you do this to me?
Right,
why did you make me this way?
Now, remember the cuddle therapy? That is awesome.
How's it going for Marcus Bachman? Does he still have his clinic? His Christian clinic?
I'm super!
Yeah, I guess so. They've got a new jingle.
Okay. All right. We've been having the gun debate all week, obviously, of Hal Sparks. And we were saying that, Wayne LaPierre, their ilk, it's always a good guy with a gun's the only explanation. We were talking about this tragedy, the sniper that was just shot at a gun range.
Yeah, shot by a fellow soldier who had PTSD that he was trying to help.
Why does this not seem like a good idea to me? He often took veterans out shooting as a way to ease the trauma of war. Taking aim at a target, he once wrote, would help coax them back into normal everyday life with familiar, comforting activity. But his death at a North Texas shooting range, allegedly at the hands of a troubled Iraq war veteran he was trying to assist, has highlighted the potential dangers of the practice. Psychiatrists wonder whether the smell of gunpowder and the crack of gunfire can trigger unpredictable responses, particularly if someone suffering.
Well, yeah.
Wouldn't this seem like you wouldn't have to be a psychiatrist to say, I don't know if that would be a good idea?
How about
the answer is always more guns and more bullets.
Right.
Let's just go out on a limb and say that the world is full of places, people, and activities that have nothing to do with the killing of another human being or an animal. In all honesty, there are literally millions of things you could be doing to distract your brain pain.
I understand. I heard Paul Rieckhoff, our friend, talking about this. He said, you know, sometimes it's a way to reconnect, you know, it's like the transition into civilian life, reconnect with other veterans.
Then play paintball.
Right. I don't.
But don't use live ammo.
This guy was taken to a psychiatric hospital twice in recent months, right, including after he threatened to kill his family and himself.
Wow.
His mother told police her son had been drinking, became upset when his father said he was going to sell his gun. Mm. He began arguing with him, said he was going to blow his brains out. I mean, it just... This just seems like
let's go shooting.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, at a certain point, you got to go, look, it's time to learn scuba diving.
Exactly.
It's time to find an entirely different experience.
Granted, I'm a big dog lover, but they also do
pet therapy and
horseback riding and stuff. It just seems like, you know.
Well, the reality is that, and this even brings us back to the drone concept, is that the more we put young men in a highly developed, portion of their life, a portion of their life where they're doing the most mental development, which is their late teens into their early 20s, into a situation where they are being indoctrinated into the constant need to defend themselves or murder someone else for their own safety.
Mm-hmm.
Erasing those tendencies from the rest of their lives as a point of solution is very, very difficult. And the more extraordinarily tragic it is, like in the situation where there are IEDs or the enemy is not in a uniform. Mm-hmm. All these things contribute to the fact that these guys come home not knowing who a friend is. Mm-hmm. And that's not surprising they're going to have this kind of reaction. And that's why, by the way, you're going to see more drone strikes. That's why you're going to see more SEAL team kind of organizations where they come in, snipe one person, and leave. The idea of rolling guys in and
Look at the fact that we're losing more soldiers in from suicide than we are in battle right now. I mean, it's...
Exactly, because it's a horrible thing to do to a human being.
I have a great idea for it. The ride at the Abbottabad amusement park.
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Bin Laden's Wild Ride. You go straight to hell.
Right. And
you don't go through the streets of London. You just go straight to hell.
Yeah.
Right down the chute. Okay, 46 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's the life of the Democratic Party. Ignore the lampshade. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Hump Days with Sexy Liberal Hal Sparks, who will be with me April 13th, along with John Finkelstein for Chicago Sexy Liberal. Tickets are really, I'm not kidding.
Zipping away.
Zipping.
Chicago.
And you
zipping
can see
away.
Hal Sparks live if you're here in Los Angeles Sunday night at the Ice House in Pasadena.
Yeah, in Pasadena. It's one of a kind shows because in the local LA area I don't do the big full hour show very
Ice
often.
Ice House is awesome.
It's great. I used to actually have the house act there. My sketch comedy troupe used to perform there for almost 2 years in the annex there every Friday and Saturday
very
night,
cool.
3 hour long shows.
Wow.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Speaking of big shows, next Super Bowl might not have a halftime show.
What?
Can that happen? Because it's at New Jersey Meadowlands. It's going to be the first cold weather Super Bowl. They're saying it's the first time it might
we'll
be too
prove
cold.
This.
It might be too cold.
Well, just
and
have like an
know,
ABBA reunion
there's no
or
plan
something.
Right
get
now.
Somebody from the Netherlands to perform.
No plan right now what to do in its place. Maybe your sketch group could do something
absolutely. We'll
that's
come.
A little more.
Absolutely. We have this great Snow Angel sketch that we've always wanted to do in Southern California.
Who approved the cold weather Super Bowl?
I don't
that
know.
Doesn't seem
Beyonce
wise.
And like leggings and a snowsuit.
Who wants to do anything in the Meadowlands? We've been there.
Ooh.
We'll put the top on. Don't they have a top?
They don't have a top.
They don't have a top?
They don't have
speaking
a top.
Of Beyonce, get ready to say, aw. Her daughter, 12-month-old, what's her name? Blue Ivy.
Uh-huh.
She knows all the dance moves to Single Ladies. Isn't that precious? She, because it's in
of course
Alvin
she does. That's what cattle prods are for. Learn mommy's dance. Learn mommy's dance.
You know what? I should get the Walking
dance.
On Sunshine singer to open for us in Chicago. Is that legal?
Ladies
child labor? Why not?
Yeah,
why not? Oh, it's precious.
I'm walking
okay.
on sunshine. Wow.
There we go. All right. Come on. Hoof it for mama. Get out there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Ow.
Okay.
Ow. See, that's what you get from the... Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
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 Blue Ivy. Oh, poor little girl.
Oh, kids. Jennifer Aniston has enrolled she and her fiancé into a marriage boot camp. Doesn't that sound like fun?
Mm, so romantic.
An intense 3-day therapy session in Santa Monica.
Oh, that's lovely.
On arrival, they had to hand over their mobile phones. Oh, this would be like hell for you.
And
undertake counseling, couples massages, and screaming therapy where you howl your feelings out the top
God.
Of your voice.
Wow.
I'm guessing it had to do with I still hate Angelina Jolie.
No, I want a divorce right after that.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. That sounds like anything will make your genitals turtle. It's the idea of going
before marriage.
Yeah. It's like going, like helping picking out the dress by going to one of those bride conventions.
Oh,
where,
God.
Where, like, women start talking about dresses like guys talk about trucks. I'm going to get the CA-14-9 with the double X ox train, with the pull-on veil and the strip-away side panels.
And the truck nuts.
Yeah, the truck nuts. I'm going to get a couple of bulldogs on there, man. Dingly, dangly, dingly.
Dingly. Bill in Jersey.
Those things are the least romantic things in the world.
Can you get a gun rack on a dress?
Hi, Bill. Bill in Jersey.
Hello,
Bill.
Oh,
you probably offended him with your Meadowlands comment.
Right,
Jim.
That's
right.
Yeah. But if you need that, you're also setting it up. Aren't you setting up to where you can't break up because
you went to marriage.
You went to a marriage boot camp, and that's
it's like you're in the Marines now. And you can't get out.
We even tried that, and it didn't work. I mean, at a certain point, just free ball it. Just go for, swing for the fences and forget about it. Just if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it'll be like 75% of all marriages. Who cares? Just with cameras.
Whatever. It's another story about the Republican Party in disarray.
Okay.
No. GOP tension palpable as Republicans seek middle ground on pathway to citizenship.
Yeah.
How do we
make racism sound friendly?
How do we put a friendlier face on our racism?
Yeah. If you big smiley face on your Klan hat, your big pointy hat.
Republican lawmakers sought to explore a middle path between a swift pathway to citizenship that pro-immigration advocates prefer and the status quo of massive numbers of undocumented people who are depressing working-class wages. A vexing political dilemma for Republicans in particular who are caught between the aforementioned people and the need to win back Latino votes without looking like they're just doing it to win back Latino votes.
Right.
One of the Goodlatte, is that his name, the Republican, he asked Mayor Castor, he said, are there options we should consider between the extremes of mass deportation and a pathway to citizenship? Castor said he doesn't see the pathway to citizenship as an extreme option.
Right. Pointing extreme out is open borders. That's what he said. Yeah.
Right.
Extreme is just letting anybody in and just say what the hell. Yeah.
Right. He said the extreme, I would say, just to fill that out, would be open borders. No one agrees with that. That's exactly right. It's, you know what the second term is, how we're almost trying to redraw what liberalism is and what the center is, because even on these gun issues, on all of it, this is mainstream. This is not liberal positions. 92% of Americans want background checks.
Well, the reality is they are liberal positions. The thing people have to recognize is that liberal positions are not extreme.
Right.
Are largely, interestingly enough, quite conservative in just what they want to change and adapt. Because we're not looking to move the ball that way. We just want, if the Constitution says equal protection under the law, then that's what everybody should get. And that includes gay people, whether you like it or not. We like free speech in the abstract. They call us, the right will call us the nanny state party. But at the same time, when a gun violence thing like Newtown happens, they blame video games and rock music and rap. Mm-hmm. They, you know what I mean? That's what a nanny does. A nanny takes away the TV when you act up. An adult helps you change the behavior.
There you go. Guess who is named the most corrupt member of Congress, according to the Citizens?
Daryl Issa.
No, good guess.
All of them.
Ron Paul.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Report says he double-billed his travel expenses a number of times over the last decade. Wow. Ironic, because he made fiscal responsibility.
But in his defense, Ayn Rand was a cheating whore. Yeah, and I wasn't sure if I could say that. Decried the socialist state of Social Security and then lived on the government teat until the day she died. So. Basically, Ron Paul saw an opening. He stole, basically. If it's available, there it is. That's the Ron Paul version of libertarianism. If the guy left his door open, the bread is free.
Yeah.
One last posthumous.
Wheel of
Strom Thurmond. His mixed race daughter has died at the age of 80. He was the segregationist who.
Right.
He didn't believe in segregating, say, his penis from. But anyway.
Yes.
She was the daughter of Strom Thurmond and the family's maid. You remember when she announced that?
Right.
She said, I'm Essie Mae Washington Williams, and at last I am completely free.
Right.
Anyway, she has passed away at the age of 87.
Wow. She lived a long, life. That's kind of amazing.
House Sparks at the Ice House in Pasadena this Sunday. If you're in Los Angeles, tickets going very fast. Maybe going, I don't know, this week the way they're going.
Yeah.
For the April 13th Sexy Liberal at Chicago Theater. Get it. I'd like to thank Crystal Boyd, Jim Ward, T-Bone on phones and drums. Love you, House Sparks.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.